Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to KCBS In-Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In-Depth.
San Francisco is known for a lot of things. The Golden Gate Bridge, Carl the Fog, the Giants. But it's also known as a haven for the foodie. From a square slice of pizza from Golden Boy Pizza to a mission-style burrito from La Taqueria, and about a million other delights in between, the food scene in the city by the bay is definitely elite. But has it always been that way? And in these post-pandemic times, has that scene changed for the better or for the worse? Welcome to KCBS In-Depth, broadcasting throughout the Bay Area and streaming on the Odyssey app. I'm Mary Hughes. We'll dive into those questions and more with Trevor Felch, food, travel, and drinks writer. You might recognize his name from food and wine reviews in the Nob Hill Gazette or from several Fodor's guidebooks to San Francisco and other parts of the Bay Area. He's also the author of San Francisco Cocktails and of City Eats San Francisco, which came out earlier this year. Trevor, thank you so much for joining me on In Depth.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here.
I had a chance, of course, to peruse the book. And one thing you mentioned in the introduction is that today a lot of people see San Francisco as a world-class food city. And of course, with good reason. But you also note that it wasn't always viewed that way. So, you know, what brought on the changes to get San Francisco to where it is today as far as its foodie reputation?
Well, I think part of the my assessment was that San Francisco just in general is not thought of as an elder city in the same way that East Coast cities are. Even though San Francisco was created the same year that the United States was founded. But the the food scene, like in the first half of San Francisco's history, thinking about gold rush times, was not exactly, you know, like back in France when Escoffier was, you know, creating some of the most lavish cuisine in the world. Here you were having Hangtown Fry and whatever else the miners were eating on the way to the Sierras. It wasn't exactly the kind of cuisine that you're going to be talking about a century later. So San Francisco cuisine really didn't ramp up until well into the 20th century. And that's where you start talking about the whole ethos of local seasonal organic ingredients incorporated into the cooking and really inspiring the cooking. Obviously, a not San Francisco restaurant, but a restaurant in Berkeley, Chez Panisse and Alice Waters sort of gets the credit for starting that theme in a way, even though it obviously existed well before it, but it didn't become a true prominent local trend and phrase, if you will, until Chez Panisse came around in the late 70s. And so, yeah, that's why to me, it really just San Francisco may have been a good and locally highly regarded food scene before then, but it really was, give or take, the era of Stars and Chez Panisse in the 80s, Zuni Cafe coming along, Square One, and Joyce Goldstein. That sort of trend helped ramp up the San Francisco dining scene to the prominence that it is today. And really, it's only been, I'd say, nationally prominent for probably the past 30, maybe 40 years.
Well, and there's a lot of conversation about, you know, what defines San Francisco's dining scene. And one aspect that you bring up is to understand that is you need to understand the neighborhoods of San Francisco. What ways do these individual spaces and the people there play into what San Francisco is known for as far as food?
Well, first of all, any way to define San Francisco is impossible, and any way to define the dining scene of San Francisco is impossible. But like when I look at San Francisco, I see the patchwork of neighborhoods that, because San Francisco is not a grid, it's not a straightforward north, east, south, west. Like even if you look at downtown in North Beach, it's kind of northeast as opposed to just straight north. So it really is the patchwork of these tiny little communities that make up the greater 49 square miles. And the dining scene reflects that. So what exists in, you know, the southwest corner of the city is very, very different than up in downtown and North Beach, which is very different from the southeast with Dog Patch, Bayview, Hunters Point, Bernal Heights and such. So within those, you know, I don't even know what the official count of official commercial neighborhoods is in the city, but you're talking about, you know, I well over two dozen, and each one of them is just very different. Some are more, you know, business oriented, and some are more residential oriented, and a lot of them are sort of a mix of both combined with some tourism. And depending where they're situated within the city's geography, I think that influences it tremendously. Why does Fisherman's Wharf have more tourist-oriented and more seafood-oriented restaurants? And obviously, you're talking about also, you know, the different demographics, the different cultures in the cities, within the city neighborhoods. And that combined with our wonderful ingredients coming from land, sea, pastures, vineyards, et cetera, it within all of Northern California, that's how you get really these interesting recipes in each neighborhood, where one restaurant that might thrive in the Outer Sunset would close after a couple of weeks in the Mission District and vice versa. So the neighborhoods are critical to shaping the restaurants and in turn the city dining scene.
Well, and you're obviously someone who very much has their finger on the pulse of the San Francisco food world. You know, are we, and you mentioned the neighborhoods there and how some might work in one area and might not in another. But of course, one of the great levelers of recent times was the pandemic and how that really did alter, I think, the dining scene for so many cities in San Francisco, very much included. Are we seeing a comeback in the city for restaurants and bars and so on now that we are kind of, you know, creeping out of that? It sounds strange to say creeping out so many years after 2020 now, but it does still feel like we're still dealing with it. So what are you seeing in the dining scene as far as it building back after that moment?
I think it's a mix. And going back to neighborhood, I think it really is a bit of a neighborhood to neighborhood thing. For example, the outer neighborhoods out towards the ocean, the Richmond, the Sunset, I think, yeah, I don't want to say they had a renaissance because they were already great dining scenes, but just had a personality known citywide as being a little bit more sleepy, and really just the residents of those neighborhoods would go to the restaurants there. But now all of a sudden they're getting a lot more exciting openings that are drawing people from well beyond those neighborhoods. Whereas obviously it's very well known what's happening in downtown and south of Market. And we're even seeing, I'd say, the Mission District, which prior to COVID was probably the single most prominent dining neighborhood in the city, and now, I mean, still very, very prominent, but you're just not seeing the same level of openings. And it's sort of, when you're sitting in my chair, where I've been doing this for give or take a decade, you see the number of closings, you see the number of openings a week. And it still is pretty much the same, where for every opening, there seems to be a closing. However, that the shift in terms of neighborhoods, you're seeing a lot more closings in the Mission. You're seeing a lot more closings in downtown compared to the number of openings, whereas it's the opposite out, like in the Richmond and the Sunset. So COVID, I mean, is San Francisco really coming back? Well, it never went away. I think that's the important thing. San Francisco, along with LA, Chicago, and you know, New York, and maybe Portland, Oregon, you know, absolutely one of the five most prominent major food cities in the country. And that hasn't changed since COVID. The major restaurants, the major chefs are still here. But what COVID really showed, and I know it's a little bit of a controversial take, but I think the industry sort of agrees with me, is, you know, there are a lot of restaurants, and there maybe are even too many restaurants for a city of this size. Remember, San Francisco is a fraction of the size of those cities I just said. So in some ways, it's sort of, I don't want to say leveled out the playing field a little bit, but, you know, it humanized the industry in that, you know, you really had to be a tremendous restaurant, a core of your community to be able to make it through COVID. So we're seeing sort of who are the restaurants that the community really, really cares about. And those are the ones that are staying, whereas maybe some of the more corporate ones are realizing San Francisco is not the place for them to be.
Well, I think you kind of hit on it right there in your answer of that. What this did show, at least to some degree, is the places that really do have staying power, that really are these hubs for the community and for the tourists who come to the city and want to explore. I feel like that is a nice way to kind of get into your book a little bit, just because, you know, it feels it's a lot like a love letter to the recipes and the food and the establishments in the city. But it's also a guide. Someone could pick this up and say, OK, let's make our way down every single recipe. Let's try all of this. Tell me a little bit about the creation of this book and what went into the recipe choices for you.
Certainly. And yeah, a love letter to the city. I hadn't really even thought of that before, but in some ways it is my love letter to San Francisco. Even though it wasn't actually my idea, the publisher reached out to me, but the original idea stemmed from my prior book with the same publishing group about the cocktail scene in San Francisco, which is, you know, very, very extensive, very, very exciting, very historic, a good mix of historic and modern. But obviously, far fewer cocktail bars than restaurants in San Francisco. So that was originally supposed to come out in 2020, but something happened in 2020 that we were just talking about. So that was delayed to 21, and then didn't hear from them for 1 or 2 years. And then the editor reached out again saying, hey, you know, we'd love to do a little series about the most prominent food cities in the country. And I think you did a great job with the cocktails, and I was honored that he felt that I would do, you know, an equally good job for the city's dining scene. But of course, I knew, all right, cocktails are one thing, but trying to just get to the heart of San Francisco dining, that's an impossible task. You're being set up to fail because there's just so many restaurants, and basically they just say, you know, yeah, go out there, find. You decide what are the most meaningful, most important, what are the 50 or 60. I think in the end, it's about 70 different recipes for everyone to be able to cook at home or just read through. And, you know, you kind of decide, should it be a mix of more really ambitious recipes or easier recipes? I thought somewhere in the middle would probably be the best answer for that. And yeah, it really, a lot of the choices were made up to me, which I'm very, very grateful for from the publisher. But, and I thought of it sort of a little bit like my thesis as a food writer in San Francisco for the past decade or so, where And I've been very fortunate to go to so many of these different restaurants, meet so many different personalities. And you kind of, all right, but now that you've done all of that preparation and studying, here's your chance to put all of that together into, you know, one 400-page book. So it really was just sort of throwing darts at a board, but in a strategic way where you had a whole bunch of Google Docs and sheets and figured, okay, here are the priority people, if you will. And then here are the chefs who might be a little bit trickier to reach out to. Here are the ones who are always responsive. And I don't know if the listening audience knows, but chefs are not always the easiest to approach, whether it's just they're not used to the media or, you know, they're very protective of their recipes for obvious reasons. So getting recipes from some chefs was easy, from other chefs, definitely not as easy. So I really just wanted to see, you know, how can I make this comprehensive, but exciting and fun and engaging book that will appeal to locals who are new, locals who have been in San Francisco for decades, expats who miss the city and live, you know, across the country, and tourists who have never been here but think of San Francisco as this mythical, wonderful place with Alcatraz and the Golden Gate Bridge, and also for tourists who come here every year and just to eat. So it's sort of how could I appeal to everybody?
Well, I certainly think you kept it engaging, at least from my my vantage point. But I like that you're mentioning there that it can kind of appeal to a little bit of everyone who might be in San Francisco or in the Bay Area and want to explore the food scene in San Francisco. I myself am not a Bay Area native. So it's been kind of a learning process for me ever since I moved to this area. And there were certain things, you know, staples that you mentioned near the beginning of the book that I was like, I recognized very quickly. I was like, yeah, this was not a thing for me on the East Coast, but it is very much a thing specifically to the Bay Area. So and maybe you can give some explanations here if you have them. But like, what is the obsession with Dutch crunch bread? Because it's everywhere out here. And that was not anything I knew about back in North Carolina.
No, I grew up in the South Bay, and I would go to this one deli if I had a lunch break. And I don't know why Dutch crunch became such an obsession. I know there have been, I'm sure there are articles and studies. I just know it is an obsession because I would go out for lunch and you got your sandwich on Dutch crunch. Like that was the way it was. And that's the way it is throughout the city. But I think because sourdough is the signature bread of San Francisco, but sourdough is not a good sandwich bread. And Dutch crunch is a relative of the sourdough family, but it is softer and friendlier to sandwiches, and everybody loves sandwiches. So I think that, if I were just to take a guess of kind of the evolution of how somehow San Francisco history tied in to Dutch crunch, but as far as I know, I don't think it's a trendy thing anywhere outside of the Bay Area. Yeah, and there's a lot of little quirky things like that, I think, in San Francisco that we, and obviously a very famous one is the Mission style burrito that, I think really everyone orders them here in San Francisco, but I think on the East Coast, you know, it's not really the same prominent food choice that it is here. You know, talking about local ingredients, Dungeness crab is a huge deal here in its various forms. Crab Louie, Chipino, crab melts. I mean, best food at Oracle Park is the crazy crab sandwich. Yeah, I mean, I think San Francisco, in terms of signature foods, is a little bit different from other regions and other cities where we're really more, I mean, we get inspiration from the ingredients as opposed to like, we're just known for a style of pizza or a style of barbecue. We kind of, it's less about the style and it's more about the content, I think.
This might be difficult for you to answer considering the amount of recipes that you were able to get for the book and put together. But, you know, are there certain ones that you knew for sure were going to be in this book? Like there was just no chance you would leave it out.
Well, that was really up to the chefs, but I would say the absolute essential ones were more the historical ones like Crab Louie dressing and Chipino. that kind of thing just absolutely could not not be in the book. But in terms of the others, it really was more making sure certain restaurants were in it as opposed to the dish. I'd say maybe if there was one dish, the smoked duck from the Morris, a wonderful restaurant, sort of where Potrero Hill meets the Mission. And everybody loves that duck. And, you know, if there was any way to get that duck recipe, it would be wonderful. And it certainly is not something I could ever make in my little San Francisco kitchen with how ambitious it is. But just to be able to see the process and what makes it so special, I thought that was a pivotal one to have. And then I, you know, some of my personal favorite restaurants, I wanted to make sure that they were somehow involved, like the Lazy Bear True Laurel group and Flower and Water. But yeah, you know, in terms of the essential ones, I'd say it's more from a historical perspective. And I really wanted to have a mix of the historical and the new, because I think having recipes from a restaurant like Sorrel that really has been open for 6 or 7 years, I think it's just as important as having a recipe from the likes of Tadich Grill.
You touched there on the historical aspect of what this book is presenting and what recipes are in there. And of course, we have talked in this conversation about, you know, you can't fully define San Francisco's dining scene. It just like any dining scene, I think it evolves and it keeps evolving. Where are we now? Like, are there, you know, what restaurants should we be kind of keeping our eyes on then if we are coming to the city and wanting to dine and maybe we don't want to go to one of the mainstays? What should we be keeping an eye out for today?
Well, I think the dining scene in San Francisco reflects where San Francisco is as a city today. And I know that's a big thing to say, especially with a certain election coming up in a month. But I think, you know, the dining scene was so exciting and chefs could come here and open their own restaurant with limited to no investor help. But as everything gets more and more competitive, everything gets more and more expensive in the city, it's harder and harder for the most visionary, creative and talented, if you will, chefs to be able to open their own business, which I think is reflected across the board in the city. It's just harder to do anything in San Francisco now. That being said, the quality of dining in the city is still sky high. That, I mean, in many ways, you go to LA if you want to go to Hollywood. You go to San Francisco if you want to be the chef that wins the Michelin stars. But that's also where I think San Francisco needs to decide, is it really going to be a city that is mainly known as the place for Michelin stars, where you can't even think about getting in and out of a meal for under $100, which is certainly for, you know, at least the mid-scale to upscale restaurants, that's where we're at right now. That's the direction that it's going. I don't think that's healthy for a city, but it's very reflective of where San Francisco is in general overall. But I do think you are seeing, we were talking about the neighborhood, the quieter neighborhoods, that's probably where the excitement is a little bit more. That if you leave that main downtown to the Mission core, give or take, that there are younger chefs, visionary chefs, chefs who are, you know, maybe second generation Americans who are channeling the, you know, where their parents immigrated from and just doing wonderful, wonderful interpretations of those cuisines through a California lens. So I think we're starting to see, you know, it's really San Francisco has to decide, are we going to become really just the hoity-toity fine dining scene and then there's, you know, some casual places, or are we really going to have that healthy mix that I think a dynamic city needs to have? You know, I had a wonderful contemporary Indian tasting menu out in the marina called Tia that I think is very reflective of kind of new exciting San Francisco, that it's a tasting menu, but it's not this long, crazy, expensive marathon. And yet the intricacy and the excitement in it is the same, but humans are not meant to be sitting for 3.5 to 4 hours eating 20 courses. And I think they understand that. So off the top of my head, that's one. And I think the casual things, are probably better than ever. And now we're getting so much fine dining. It's that sort of in between where, you know, you just want to go out to dinner on a Wednesday and not drop too much money. That's where I think the city is in a little bit of a tricky place. So it remains to be seen. I think the dining scene can go in a good direction. I think it also could go too much in that super expensive San Francisco direction. So we'll see. I hope it continues to get better and better. And I'm confident it will.
We focus a lot on San Francisco when we talk about the food scene in the Bay Area. But yep. What about other cities like Oakland, San Jose? You know, will there come a day where these other Bay Area locales kind of get that type of exploration, do you think?
Yes, absolutely. And it's funny that you ask, because one of the probably the biggest difference between my cocktail book and the food book is the cocktail book was about the entire Bay Area, Napa to Los Gatos. And the food book, the first decision I had to make was just make it about the city. And that's because if you're including the Napa Valley and Berkeley and San Jose and a whole bunch of communities in between, that, I mean, it would be 1,500 pages. So I thought San Francisco's food scene is just so prominent. There are so many great restaurants and recipes and stories to share that it really deserves its own book. And frankly, Berkeley deserves its own book. Oakland deserves its own book. But I think, yes, to truly appreciate and enjoy the San Francisco dining scene, you have to factor in all of the other Bay Area cities, which in my lifetime certainly have gotten more and more exciting. That you know, Oakland has always had good restaurants, but now people travel from all over the country to eat at San Francisco, but they'll also go to Oakland. And obviously places like Berkeley and Napa Valley, Healdsburg, Sonoma, they've been prominent for decades in the food scene. And now we're seeing a lot more of the quieter suburbs, Livermore, San Mateo, Milpitas. I sound like I'm doing the KCBS weather here, but you know, they're all great, you know, food cities now, which, you know, that is not something I would have thought about for, I mean, even my own home area, Palo Alto, we've never been known for food. We've always had good local restaurants, but now we have places that draw visitors from an hour away. And the same can be said up and down the peninsula and the East Bay and San Jose, just by virtue of being such a vast, big city. I mean, there are just so many different places to eat there. And Marin has a great Michelin star restaurant in San Anselmo at Madcap. I remember going there when it opened back in like 2015, thinking like, how does this restaurant exist here? And you can say that throughout Napa County and Sonoma County as well. So yeah, I think San Francisco might, you know, be the symbolic headquarters, if you will, for the great food scene of the Bay Area, but I mean, it's the overall Bay Area food scene that really is the special thing, and San Francisco is just a huge part of it.
Trevor, thank you so much for digging into this with me. I highly recommend the book to folks who want to try some of these recipes out at home, or maybe it just inspires them to want to go to one of their favorite places or new favorite places and try them out there.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mary.
You can find this episode and past episodes of In-Depth online at kcbsradio.com. You can also hear In-Depth episodes on the Odyssey app. Thanks for listening. For KCBS and In-Depth, I'm Mary Hughes.
Listening to KCBS In-Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.